The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. When Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of King Herod, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star at its rising and have come to do him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Assembling all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it has been written through the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, since from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod called the Magi secretly and ascertained from them the time of the star's appearance. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word that I too may go and do him homage." After their audience with the king, they set out, and behold, the star that they had seen at its rising preceded them, until it came and stopped over the place where the child was. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves and did him homage. Then they opened their treasures and offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for their country by another way. The Gospel of the Lord. Good, so once again, good morning, brothers and sisters, and welcome everybody to the Feast of the Epiphany. Sometimes they call it Little Christmas. The Feast of the Epiphany, next to Christmas Day, probably the most beloved feast day of our entire year. Just in case you don't know what the Feast of the Epiphany is all about, I will jog your memory, okay? The Feast of the Epiphany commemorates the visit of the Magi to the Christ child in Bethlehem, following the light of a star, crossing over the distance of the desert, bearing in their hands gifts for the King of Heaven. That's the Feast of the Epiphany. Sometimes people ask, well, why is that a feast day? You know, I'm just completing my Christmas manger scene. Why is that a feast day? The reason why that's a feast day is because this is the first time anyone outside of Israel recognizes Jesus for who he truly is. Now understand, one of the greatest prophecies of the Old Testament is that one day all the nations of the world would come to adore the God of Israel. It's in the prophets, it's in the Psalms. In fact, that was your first reading. That's what it was all about. That was your psalm response for the day, Psalm 72. That's what it was all about. The long prophesied belief so dear to the hearts of the Israelites that one day all the nations of the world would come to worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And on the Feast of the Epiphany, that prophecy proves true. How do we know that that prophecy proves true just because the Magi visited the Christ child? Well, the answer is, we know because of the gifts that they brought. Gold. It's a gift for a king. Frankincense. It's a fancy word for incense. It's a gift for a priest. And myrrh. Oil used to anoint a dead body. Very strange gift to give to a baby. Unless, of course, you know who this baby is. And these gifts prove the Magi knew the Hebrew scriptures that one day from the land of Judah would be born a king who would shepherd not only his people Israel, but would lead all the nations of the earth to salvation, offering his life as a ransom for many. And just as a neat little aside, this is one of the reasons why when the Magi are depicted in artwork, they're depicted as being three different races. One from Africa, one from Europe, one from Asia. historically speaking, of course, that probably almost impossible that that would have happened, but that's why they're depicted that way, the fulfillment of the prophecy. Now, Feast of the Epiphany, so beloved, and one of the reasons why is because it's so shrouded in mystery. Who were these magi? Where did they come from? How did they know when they saw this star what the star meant? And how did they know where to go? And what was the star? And why did they bring these mysterious gifts? These three magi make their appearance on the grandest stage in history, the very fulcrum of all history. And then they quietly disappear off into the night, never to be seen or heard from again. Full of mystery this day. And the reason why that's so beloved is because we know somewhere deep in the marrow of our bones that every authentic encounter with God has to be somehow shrouded in mystery. Now, here's my question for you here this morning. Why is that the case? Why does it have to be that encounters with God are shrouded in mystery? You know, the word epiphany means making forth, showing forth, making known. Do you think that if you were God and you could show yourself, make yourself known to all the nations of the world, do you think just maybe you might have made a grander entrance than that? What kind of an epiphany is that? Why is God shrouded in mystery? Why are holy places dark places? I remember I was speaking with a young man once and he expressed his frustration. He says, why doesn't God just show himself to me? I keep the commandments, I say my prayers, I receive the sacraments. Why does God hide his face? Has that question ever raced through your mind? I know it's raced through my mind. And certainly not my mind alone. I think I might have told you before the little anecdote about the famous British philosopher, Bertrand Russell. Bertrand Russell, famous philosopher and also outspoken atheist for his entire life. And he was on his deathbed and he was lay there expecting to die. And somebody came and visited Bertrand Russell and said, Dr. Russell, you know you're about to die. And you've been an atheist your entire life. Don't you think maybe it's time you, hedge your bets a little bit? What happens if you breathe your last and it turns out that there is a God after all? What are you going to say to him? And he answered, he said, I would look the Almighty in the eye and I would say to him, sir, it appears that my atheistic hypothesis has proven to be erroneous. Since you do, in fact, exist, may I ask you just one small question? Why didn't you give us all more evidence? That's the question I ask you to think about here this morning. And not only that, but why is it so hard to find God? Think about these magi. They found Christ. But boy, they had to struggle to find him, didn't they? No first-class tickets, no Amazon next day air, right? They had to work for it and for months. And boy, did they have to give their best. I hope you already know that gold, frankincense, and myrrh are not cheap. Very much like ourselves. Not easy to find God, is it? Got to keep all these commandments and you keep failing, falling down, losing heart, wanting to quit, getting up again and starting all over again, and you have to give your bestest of your bestest, all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Why can't God make himself visible? And why doesn't he make it easy? You know, last week he came as a baby in Christmas time, and now suddenly he's so hard to find. What gives? Can I answer my own little hypothetical question this morning just by giving you an image to think about? Think about this image. Imagine, if you will, a perfectly cooked steak. Fresh off the grill, sizzling and popping and cooked to perfection, served up on a great big plate with a generous serving of thick-cut steak fries and an ice-cold beer. Now you take this perfect meal and you put it before a man with a temperature of 102, what does he think of the steak? He's repulsed by it, isn't he? Can't stand the sight, can't stand the smell. Question. Is there anything wrong with the steak? No. Is there anything wrong with the man? Yes. he's very sick. Now that image is a pretty decent image to help explain why God is so hard to find. Question, is there anything wrong with God? No. Is there anything wrong with us? Yes. We're sick. Did you know that? I hope you know that. Spiritually speaking, we are all very sick. You want to know what our sickness is? Fathers of the church described it in these words. They said we are incurvatus in se. That's Latin, and it means we are closed inwards on ourselves. As a creature made in God's image, meant to give by your very nature to God and to others, the very definition of spiritual illness is to be selfish. Selfishness is the root of all sin. Selfishness is the reason why it's so hard for us to find God. That illness explains why it's so hard to find time to pray, but it's so easy to find time to play a video game or look at the YouTubes. Why it's so hard to offer an act of charity to a friend in need, and it's so easy to do something for yourself. Why it's so hard to keep God's commandments, and it's so easy to do what's wrong. Why? Because we're sick. Because we're spiritually ill. Now, that's the bad news, okay? That's the bad news, but there is good news. Here's the good news. The closer you get to God, the more that process begins to reverse itself. You can get healthy again. When a soul is very, very worldly, very filled with this world, the things of God are as repulsive as a cooked steak would be to a man with the flu. Prayer is difficult, works of charity are difficult, keeping commandments are so burdensome you can't even be bothered when someone's very worldly. However, make a little bit of progress. Maybe you become refined and mediocre like most of us. We can still be about the things of God, and maybe it's a little bit of a sacrifice, maybe it's a little bit of a stoic endurance, but it's not as bad as it was before. Good news is, when someone really grows in holiness and becomes a saint, the things of God become pleasant and easy and effortless. In fact, it's one of the criteria they use to canonize saints when they ask, did this person have heroic virtue? Did they do things which most people find very difficult? Did they do those things effortlessly and easily? Things like forgiving a neighbor from the heart or lending a helping hand at great personal expense. Effortlessly, easily, the things of God are a delight. That's because every time we meet Jesus Christ, we're changed. We're changed every time and a little bit more every time. Symbolically, that's mentioned here in our gospel. Magi go and see the Christ child in Bethlehem, but they don't go back the same way they came. They departed for their country by another way. Everybody's changed after they meet Jesus Christ. Here's something I found rifling through my folder of notes that you might find interesting to hear. This is called 10 Signs That You've Met Jesus Christ, okay? 10 signs. More frequent joy, less frequent sadness. More frequent gratitude, less frequent complaining. Loss of the ability to worry, loss of the ability to fear. Loss of interest in judging other people. Loss of interest in judging yourself. Deeper connections with other people. Deepened ability to give without expecting anything in return. 10 signs that you met Jesus Christ. One of the reasons why it's so difficult to find the things of God is because it's so valuable. Haven't you ever noticed this? Everything in life worth having comes at the cost of a fight or a sacrifice. Take gold, for example. Where do you find gold? Lying around on the ground? No. No, you have to dig for it. It's not easy. It doesn't reveal itself. Where do you find diamonds? You find them deep in the heart of the earth. You got to dig down so deep that it's dangerous. Where do you find pearls? Bottom of the ocean, right? All the things worth having come at a great expense, and generally speaking, things that don't come at great expense